Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This song is dedicated to Michelle Obama on her trip to Spain. Actually, the song is dedicated to the King of Spain. The pain from Spain falls mainly down the drain. Big trip to Spain. Yeah. Couple of the people. Typical communists. Do as I say, not as I do. Now that I'm king and she's queen, we'll use Air Force 12345 and you'll pay for it, you peasants. Here we are. The shooting in San Francisco has gotten out of control. Again, this is what happens in a liberal city where the police are told to stand down and turn the other way. A German tourist was shot dead in front of her husband in the theater district. Walking in the theater district, woman in her 50s, she has a name, Mathilde Schur, age 50, of Germany, killed Sunday night, 9 o'clock, right in front of a theater because she was caught in the crossfire between two gangs. And she didn't even know she was hit. She died in her husband's arms. And the city of San Francisco has nothing to say. They won't identify the perps. The verminous vermin rat bums in the newspapers won't identify who did the shooting. But with the help of a taxi driver and other bystanders, police have detained five teenagers. Don't you love the word teenagers? Don't you love it? The shooters were teenagers, but we're supposed to believe that we don't know who they are. Teenagers makes them somehow innocent. So they have guns. They get in a shootout. Streets of San Francisco are wilder and more dangerous than ever. And the vermin in the newspapers won't even identify the shooters because it may prove embarrassing to certain special interest groups. And the mayor, what about the mayor, Gavin Newsom? The mayor condemned the violence and offered condolences to the victim's family. Isn't that nice, Mayor Newsom? That's really cracking down. 1-800-449. What are you going to call about that? I got bigger stories than that one to talk about. And that's all. That's all. The big story today is Michelle's blunder. In other words, she goes to Spain while people here, you got a double dip inflation. It's at 10%. And you got people behind in their mortgages. And she says she's just like you. And now she's flying around going to Spain. The question is, why didn't she go to San Diego if she likes beaches so much and ice cream? I mean, she can get an ice cream cone in Chicago, number one. I love how she lectures on diet and exercise and vegetable gardens and rolling sweet potato gardens. And every time I look, she's eating an ice cream cone. What kind of message is that? It's the same message as I just said. Do as I say, not as I do. But the point is really bigger than that. Here we have a nation in fiscal crisis with an out-of-control government that has no idea about fiscal constraint. And their own party has abandoned their insanity. For example, one of the Council of Economic Advisors, a fairly moderate woman, I am told, by comparison to what's going on around her, has left. She's gone back to her teaching job at the University of California at Berkeley, Christine Romer. And so now it's going to be turned over to the radicals, the complete left-wing lunatics, who have never managed a hot dog stand, let alone offered a service to anyone that anyone's ever needed. And so what they're going to do is obvious. With the insane Nancy Pelosi, Big Chin Pelosi there, she's going to write more checks for more people, more public works projects, and she's going to further indebt America to the point where we'll become nothing but a fax republic. Not a banana republic, because we don't grow bananas here. I think all we produce are faxes and emails. That's about the only product left in America since Bill Clinton exported our factories to China 15 years ago. All we have left are fax machines amongst those who don't have email and a postal service that should be closed down. Yeah, I thought about that last week as the high carbon postal truck came up my block at 5 o'clock to deliver the mail. Crack, you know, like just like the Pony Express. There was the driver, the third world, that got his first job picking his nose in the truck. And he comes every day at 5 o'clock, just when I needed the mail at the end of a work day. And the fumes from the postal truck come into the window of the house. And I ask myself, why does a government that can't even run a postal service right, after all these years, think they can run a healthcare department correctly? The answer is they don't care. Of course they can't run a healthcare any more efficiently than it's been run. Of course they're going to wreck the economy even further. But why should it matter to Michelle Obama when she has Air Force Two? You know what I'm saying? So in light of that fact, it's kind of a crazy situation for all of us. And that's why I say we have to focus on the economics of the situation more than anything else. Let's bake it down to a brass tacks. It's time to admit that Obamanomics has failed America. Everybody is saying that, even stupid liberals who voted for for the president. The economy is stalling. Unemployment is stuck at European levels of idleness, 10%. The federal deficit and the national debt are at historic highs. The public's confidence in Congress is at its lowest ever level. Big majority of mainstream Americans say Obama has the country on the wrong path. Obamanomics is a miserable failure, and everybody has admitted it except Obama and his minions. Isn't it time for you to admit it? Even Christina Rome, a chairwoman of the White House Council of Economic Advisors, retired on Friday. 131,000 jobs lost in July. Downward revisions of 97,000 for the previous 2 months. So she's looking for the exits, of course. Now, what's going to happen is that there's going to be more money for stimulus, meaning Nancy Pelosi has to reward her friends who don't even know what to do with the money that's already falling out of their Swiss bank accounts. $308 million in subsidies to BP before the Gulf oil disaster. Subsidizing a study on what happens when monkeys snort cocaine. This is the government under psychopathic college liberals. That's why I say the pain from Spain falls mainly down the drain. Now, I'm all over the map today, which is beautiful, because that's the way it has to be for you. You have a low attention span, and this is not the public broadcasting where we work on the public's dime. I have to maintain your attention. They don't. Now, over the weekend, in addition to finding new rock and roll songs for you, could you play Lonely Boy by Paul Anka, by the way? Play Lonely Boy on the Paul Anka Show.
I'm just a lonely boy.
Boo-hoo.
Lonely and blue. I'm all alone.
Remember this?
With nothing to do. I've got everything.
All right, it doesn't have any verb anyway. Break that record. Short Shorts, I could say Short Shorts still works, but the Lonely Boy, the Crybaby, that's not going to work anymore. So over the weekend, I was so bored. It was worse than watching paint dry. There was no news other than Michelle making a mockery of the presidency. Other than that, Bill Gates, I saw him on C-SPAN arguing for death panels, and I almost fell out of my chair. I said, wait a minute. Don't you remember last spring I don't know what season we're in already. It's summer, right? In the spring, whenever they were trying to push Obamacare, we so-called right-wingers, who are really the rationalists of today, we're actually the rationalists of today. The rationalists try to warn you that the health care bill would contain death panels. And the propaganda ministry put out the big report, no, there are no death panels, that's right-wing paranoia. It's been proven not to be true. Well, it turns out that, in fact, Rahm Emanuel's brother, whatever his name is, Ezekiel Emanuel, I think he has another brother named Jeremiah, but he hasn't yet appeared from the old country. But Ezekiel Emanuel, a doctor himself, in fact, argued for such death panels in a position paper he had written a number of years ago. And we were told he was one of the individuals who was deeply involved in drafting Obamacare. Well, now I wake up on Sunday, and I hear Microsoft CEO Bill Gates putting on the cardigan sweater act, calling for death panels. We have that sound for you. Wait, there's more. There's plenty more. And I burned my palm today at Starbucks. I have that story to tell just before the show. I'm sitting here with it sprayed with some goo lucky I had in the closet here at the radio studio. Why in the hell do they make coffee so hot? Why is it when I go in for coffee before the show and I say, give me a small coffee, they always get a moron who says tall coffee? And I say, no, I said small coffee. And the moron will repeat again, since it's the Bay Area, filled with the biggest schmucks on earth. Tall coffee. I said small coffee. And she looks at me with the clipped hair and the mean face, another moron they hired, and says, tall, small, it's all the same. I said, then why can't you call it what it is? Just give me a cup of coffee, will you please? She gives me the cup of coffee. I give her a tip because I tip fast food workers everywhere. Unfortunately for me, she left the top loose on it. I grabbed the cup, and it spilled on my left hand and burnt my palm. I didn't say anything. I'm not a liberal. I'm not going to sue. I know some of you are out-of-work lawyers who can't get a job with Obama, and you'd like my phone number. It's 1-800-449-8255. I'm Michael Savage. I'll be back. Savage.
Maybelline, why can't you be true? Oh, Maybelline, why can't you be true? You done started doing the things you used to do.
It is the Savage Nation. So here it is Monday. We're talking about the imperious First Lady on a trip to Spain when many people are suffering. Look, I'm not. I'm not going to make believe that I'm, you know, out of work. I'm not. I'm not unemployed. I'm highly, you know, I'm employed. I'm doing well. But the fact is, I do speak for many of you who are in trouble and no one speaks for you. And the newspapers are all propaganda rags and they won't tell you what's true. By and large, they try to bury anything that makes Obama look like what he is. It's an embarrassment. Michelle Obama is an embarrassment for the presidency right now. And some are noting it. Mainly in Europe, they're noticing it. One woman writer for the Post called her the Marie Antoinette of the day. I would call her the Madame Defarge of the day. She got it almost right. She's not Marie Antoinette. I mean, she's more like Madame Defarge. She just hasn't yet. She's keeping the books yet. She hasn't yet opened up the camps. And I burnt my palm at Starbucks, and I'm not going to sue. But I do have an attorney on the line. Charlie from Tampa, welcome to the show.
Hey, hello, Michael. Yeah, I was listening to your show, and I understand you have a severe third-degree burn possibly on your hand. And
I really do. I don't sue, but I'm pissed off because they make the coffee so hot. First of all, why didn't she put the lid on tight enough that when I picked it up to carry it across the floor, I spilled it on the palm of my hand. I burned my hand. It turned red. I mean, luckily I came to the studio and I have a spray, you know, with benzocaine in it, and the pain went away. But the hand's red. The palm is red. It'll smart for a few days.
You know, something like that, Michael's worth probably $1 million, maybe $500,000.
Ah, come on. You couldn't get a mill for a burn like this.
Well, you being a celebrity, maybe we can even up that a little bit. You're right. Maybe $4 or $5 million.
I'll tell you what. You know what? I'd put every dime into my Savage legal fund, and any money that's left over goes to a scholarship anyway.
Well, as a tort attorney, I don't even need to get a reason to sue. I just got to think I can make some money, sir. You know what I mean? Hey, it's what we do.
Well, I don't know how you can do it in good conscience, but I'm burned with guilt and a conscience. I was raised with a guilt complex, so I'm afraid to sue for nothing, you know.
Well, no, that's a good cause because you're severely, could be handicapped for life now.
Come on. I'm not a New York City cop or fireman.
Hey, you know what, though, with your...
They're collecting it like gravy over there. I have so lost respect for these professions, you have no idea. The double-dipping, they all look like crooks to me now.
Well, now BP's going to be sued because Charlie Crist opened the door for the homeowners to sue him now, so it's going to be an endless process. We are a litigious society.
They got cops in New York who are living on disability, 75% of a full salary, no taxes. Now they want to add mental stress so they can get even more money out of the taxpayer on a higher Social Security disability pension. It's shocking to me. You know and I know that this is going to come to an end, these gravy train contracts that the unions wrote. They're going to revise all of them. You know that.
Hey, I can need to go out and make as much money as I can before our country falls.
Well, what are you putting your money into, though? Spanish pesos, or where are you investing it?
Oh, gold bullion.
You are? You're in bullion? So let's say, when it all comes down, do you really think that we're going to trade, like, chips of bullion with each other for, like, white bread or something?
Well, the dollar's not going to be worth nothing, so I might as well have something that's I can hold on to. That my gun.
Well, I hear they're thinking of changing the dollar bill and putting Obama on it, you know. It's going to be called the Obama rather than the dollar. And what's a dollar now will be worth a penny, but it'll be made of paper.
Oh, boy, we'll be buying yen before long, I guess.
Yeah, the yen. We'll be using yen in the streets. I have a yen for some yen. How much is a scold like this worth on the hand, on the palm?
Well, you know, if we talk to your, the insurance company, I'm sure we can settle something out of court, something that we could use for your legal funds.
Yeah, and then I would get on the air and I'd say, I didn't do it for the money. I did it so that the next poor person doesn't scold their hand, right? I'd do one of those speeches.
Well, next time they can check, you know, teach these ninth grade dropouts how to put a lid on properly.
I couldn't believe it. She did it on purpose, too, because I dared say small instead of tall.
You know what? It's probably a hate crime because she knew who you were, Michael.
Well, she may have known. I saw the clipped hair and the mean face do a double clock. It's certainly possible. She gave a little double clock when I said small. You know, everyone here walks around like they're a cigar store dummy without a secondary sexual characteristic. The men are afraid to say a word to anybody, so everybody steps on them. The only ones who have the guts are the idiot gangs who run around with guns. The cops even hide from them.
And those little teenagers happen to be illegal Mexicans.
No, you shouldn't say that. They all come here to work. They come here to take the menial jobs that poor white men wouldn't take. None of them go into gangs. You know that.
Yeah, they're like little cocks.
Boys won't take. They all come here to work. They're poor dishwashers. None of them join gangs. Just ask Obama, the same man who knows how to save the economy. The economy. It's not even the economy anymore. It's the economy.
Oh, the economy.
Well, Charlie, leave your email with my, if I wake up on the wrong side of the bed tomorrow, I'll consider filing a lawsuit against this coffee company.
Savage.
It's Monday. Most normal people are in Spain. They're somewhere. Everybody's somewhere. I don't know. Everyone's on vacation but me. I'm the only one who won't go on vacation. I refuse. Now, don't assume I'm just some grumpy old guy. I mean, I have been in many, many places. Some exotic, some pedestrian. I don't get the charge out of travel that most people do. Yet I understand the need for travel. To be the idea of going somewhere, you know, to feel like you've left your regular day behind. But, you know, when you're in the media and you live on the edge, as we do, if you're doing the right thing here, traveling doesn't do the same thing that it used to do. I mean, you need it if you have a kind of humdrum life. I don't understand it as much. Maybe when I was young, exotic. Well, what's there? But even the world, 30 years ago, there were differences. You go to Spain, you'd see women walking around in black. Now you go there, you see women looking like the same that you see here. Let's be specific. The same clothing everywhere. It's one homogenous blur, the entire world. One homogenous Western blob has descended upon the world from here to Manchuria. The same thing, everyone wanting to look like a child at Disneyland. So what's the excitement? You trek to Mongolia and see Mongolians wearing the crack outfits that they wear in the streets of a ghetto here with the same, you know, haircuts. So who needs it? I'd rather stay here, whatever. So yesterday I got bored because of that, and I realized that, you know, happiness is within. The kingdom of God is within. It's not out there. I don't have to go to Jerusalem to find God, so to speak. So, you know, it was written years ago, the kingdom of God is within, and the kingdom of happiness is within you also. So I said, you know, you got to make yourself interested in life. Life isn't going to come to you and make you interested, so stop it already. You've been there and you've done this, you've gone in circles. Stop with the boredom talk. I had to whip myself into action. It's like one of those doldrum times, you know, where like I'm becalmed on the sea, the high sea of life in that sense. because success is a stale finale. I got to admit it to you. I'm not boasting. Eugene O'Neill wrote that. It's 100% true. The years I was struggling were more interesting in a way than these years. And I'm not begging fate to suddenly cast me down again. But the point I'm saying is success is a stale finale. There's no question about it. Eugene O'Neill wrote that success is a stale finale, as I just said. The struggle is the success. And when you cease to have a reason to struggle, believe me, nature hates a void. Nature abhors a vacuum, as it's been said. And she'll fill that vacuum with something for you to struggle with, whether it be a nice cancer maybe, a little brain tumor, whatever. Go ahead, keep complaining, and you'll have a nice little reward, I say to myself, because I am, man, I look up. I mean, I know that he's up there looking down, and I know you start asking for too much, you know what you get, a good kick in the behind. So I said to myself, all right, stop it already. You love art. So I go to Bonham's Auction Gallery. Lucky for me, it was a gloomy Sunday in San Francisco, and the Bonham's Auction Gallery is coming up with an auction of Western paintings. Now, I don't mean European art. I mean fine paintings of the West, whether it be Indians or cowboy, just really good, really high-end. I'm not talking Dreck art. We're not talking John Nagy. I look online, and I go through maybe 150 paintings, and I found about six that really look good. So, okay, we pack the whole group into the car, dogs and all. We trek over to the homeless encampment down south of Market, near South Van Ness. We pass the shopping cart folks, and we go into the auction gallery. It was a very nice experience. I felt transformed back to my early years of enjoying art and being in my father's antique store and going to museums. And I looked at the paintings very, very closely. They looked better than they did in the catalog, the online catalog, incidentally. Five of the six did. There was one that struck me as particularly amazing. And it showed a group of, I forget which Indian tribe, you'll have to forgive me, I don't remember which one. It shows them making camp after the first snowfall, where the commentary about it is, it's the first snowfall in the West, you know, some Western range. And this tribe of amazing Native Americans are going out on a hunt after the first snowfall. And they say that the hunt will be very easy because the animal's tracks will be highly visible in that first snowfall. And I think it's called a smokeless fire. These people were such geniuses, the Native Americans, that they could build a fire in the snow with a little lean-to, a smokeless fire. And I'm the kind of guy where I could stare at a painting and get so sucked into it that I'm in there with them. And I'm saying, my God, 20,000 years of living on this continent. And these people not only could live off the land, they had a civilization to go with it. They weren't just simply primitives, you know, grunting. They had a real civilization, a language of their own, a culture of their own, rituals of their own, astoundingly beautiful. But this isn't the first time I've come to that. I wrote a book in 1972 called Earth Medicine, Earth Foods, Native American Remedies, etc. So I've long been an admirer of Native American culture, to be frank with you. This isn't the first. But it's a great painting. It brings you back to the reality of what we're living and how lucky we really are, how lazy we all really are, and how incapable we really are of living on our own, unless you're the rare guy who knows how to hunt and trap and things of that nature. And I don't know how many of them are left. Don't call me if you are. I appreciate that, you know, that many of you do know how to do it. So here we are, and that's the end of that. And here we are, and I had a bad Chinese meal, overate, almost had the stomach, and wake up to again an ice cream cone in Mallorca. How does she eat ice cream cones? Why do they say she's one of the best-dressed women on earth? Everyone knows that's a lie. I mean, it is a topic. That's what I was going to tell you. So I'm in the place, looking at the paintings. Now I wanted to tell you the point of the story. So there's a showcase on the way out with like memorabilia, like letters, you know, from the artists. And I had to tell the audience this, I knew it. I look in the showcase and it's a letter from 1924 from the artist, one of the famous Western artists, to the client who had purchased a painting for, I don't know, $75 at the time. And the artist writes a beautiful letter in beautiful handwriting, unlike today where they have hieroglyphics, they text, they can't even write their name. He writes a gorgeous letter in blue ink to the buyer. And he said, enclosed is the bill. And I wanted to make this as beautiful as the painting. And so herewith is the enclosed. And he did a painting on the letter, on the bill, to the buyer. So I'm staring at this saying, why, my God, what a world this was of civility. And there were a group of gay men in the place. And we had a nice conversation. They loved my dog and there was a different kind of group than you see the rabble here in San Francisco. This is the type of guys I grew up with in New York, much more civilized. Gay or straight didn't matter. You know, they talked to us because they loved the dog, and they said he looks like a little lion. You know, there was it was a different world, the kind I grew up in, as opposed to the rabble out here who think that they're wild because they have green hair and a ring in their nose. You know, they disguise left-wing politics for sexuality. These guys were very nice. I'm leaning over the case, and one of these gay guys comes over, men in their middle age, and looks in, and I said, "My God, look at the letter." And he says, "Look at that letter." And I said, "Isn't it amazing the time, the 20s, that an artist would write, I wanted to make this as beautiful as the painting?" And he paints another painting on the bill for the buyer, and he says, "Yes, yes, yes." And I said, "Yep, an age of dignity." And he said, "That's exactly the word, isn't it?" That's all a little snapshot of a day. Nothing profound. But what I'm getting at is, why do I have to go to Iceland on vacation? Why do I have to go to Alaska to see a toothless Inuit with an ice cream cone? I mean, why do I have to go there when I can go in my own city if I know where to go, the haunts and this and that, to get what I need out of it? I need to go see toothless Inuits on crack cocaine? I'll be right back.
Savage.
Well, love, lovey, darling, come and go with me. Come with me, way beyond the sea. I need you, darling, so come go with me.
Told you the art story. You're not interested in me at the gallery, so we'll go to the ridiculous and the sexual. That said, what can you do? You're not interested in the high, so I'll go to the lowbrow. Here's a story. Early puberty for girls is raising health concerns. It's in the USA Today. Girls hitting puberty earlier. Percentage of 7-year-old girls now with early breast development. It's like rising. Then they break it down ethnically. You know, these people are sick. Everything is racial to these sickos. Everything they make racial. Everything. I never saw such a racist society in my life since Obama came along. Now they're looking at the difference between whites, blacks, and Hispanics, and they're showing black girls become, they have puberty earlier than white girls, a higher rate than Hispanics. So now what's the point of the study? Now wait, here it goes. The median age of breast development fell from 10.9 years to 9.9 in 06. According to a Danish study published in Pediatrics last year, the new study doesn't explain why girls are developing earlier, but it hints that heavier girls with a higher body mass index were more likely than others to begin puberty early. So what is it, the ice cream cone? Again, ice cream did it? No. Now we go into the chemicals in the environment story. Here it comes now with the chemicals in the environment, which is possible. Hormone-disrupting chemicals in the environment. Animal studies suggest that many environmental toxins can affect the age of puberty. Suspect chemicals include pesticides used in farms and lawns, flame retardants found in furniture and electronics, and bisphenol A or BPA, an estrogen-like ingredient found in plastic bottles. And researchers are collecting blood and urine samples from girls and will be able to analyze their exposure to toxins. Now we go into the boy part of it. See, now I know you're listening. Animal and human studies suggest certain chemicals may affect male sexual development, which explains, of course, the broadcasters on MSNBC. Now you'll understand why they are the way they are. They may look like men, but the herbicide atrazine, for example, has been shown to chemically castrate some male frogs of the type found on MSNBC and turn others into females of the type found late on MSNBC and to lay eggs. As you know, they lay eggs regularly on MSNBC. And a 2008 study found that baby boys are more likely to have genital changes such as undescended testicles and smaller penises. Again, now we're talking about CNN. If they were exposed before birth to high levels of phthalates, which are hormone-disrupting chemicals found in medical tubing, vinyl, and other products. And you look at CNN, you know damn well it's true. The chemical industry says these chemicals are safe and have never been definitively proven to harm humans. So there it is. Girls will develop low self-esteem. Here we go, low self-esteem already. I heard such of this garbage already. Every time I turn on another prison show, I happen to see them having such a good time in jail. Group therapy, special meals. And how are you feeling today, Mr. Jones? Well, I really didn't want to kill those 7 people, but I was trying to overcome something in myself with low self-esteem. But I feel much better now that I understand what triggered it. I'm ready to rejoin society and take a job, maybe as a beer truck driver in New Haven, Connecticut. So if they look at me the wrong way, I can whack them. There it is. So that's the way my mind works. If you don't like it, don't listen to the show, but don't tell me not to think or be who I am, if you don't mind. So what do you want to talk about now that you got it all? Well, I have your attention, so now I'll get to the serious stuff, now that we've gotten past the puberty stuff. So Bill Gates is arguing for death panels. Listen to Bill Gates talking about health care. I caught it on C-SPAN yesterday. I may be the only one in America. I was stunned. Listen to clip 02.
You know, is spending $1 million on that last 3 months of life for that patient, would it be better not to lay off those 10 teachers and to make that trade-off in medical costs? But that's called the death panel, and you're not supposed to have that discussion.
You see, so he's now toying with the very death panels that we warned you Obama was trying to introduce with Obamacare. And, of course, the vermin in the media, the propagandists in the Reichstag, the propagandists in the Reichstag said, no, there are no death panels. Now we find out there actually are death panels. So they're using the greatest salesman of all time, Bill Gates, with his ecology look to peddle the death panel idea. Now he then attacks specialists in medicine. Listen to clip 3.
One statistic that jumps out is we have 3 times as many specialists as we have general practitioners. And no one else's system has anything like that. That is unique to the United States, and it's because it's a rigged market. That is,
now, let's stop for a minute. Now, I want to ask you something. Do you actually think that Bill Gates would go to a general practitioner if he had something serious wrong with himself? You know he'd go to a so-called specialist, the best in the land, wouldn't he? And it wouldn't be found in Cuba. It'd be found somewhere, or perhaps maybe in Seattle. I doubt it. Perhaps UCLA Med Center, somewhere in New York. But he certainly wouldn't go to Cuba for his medical care. And you know he'd seek out a so-called specialist. But here's Bill Gates now, the salesman, not only arguing in a subtle way for death panels, but against specialists in medicine, saying they should all be GPs. And perhaps next he will argue that we shouldn't have any Americans going to medical school anymore because they're spoiled and they speak English that's too good. So we should bring more people in from Pakistan to be doctors. This is unbelievable to me. Now listen to clip 5. This is the best of them all in clip 5.
In Medicare, if you can get your asthmatics to have acute episodes, you get rich. And if you teach them how to take their medicine and how to do the right things, you go to the poorhouse.
So here is Bill Gates now attacking doctors, calling them corrupt, saying that they're all corrupt. And it's unbelievable to me how he suddenly threw himself into this discussion. I wish old Bill Gates had shown his true colors back when Obamacare was being shoved down our throats by Nancy Pelosi. But Nancy Pelosi, with the hammer, you know, she just hammered it down our throats. And now Bill Gates suddenly is telling us that there are death panels, we don't need specialists, et cetera, and so on. Now, having said that, if you ask me, do we need revisions in the healthcare model in America? Yes, we do. I have a much simpler solution that wouldn't upset too many people, that would get rid of the grifters. And that's called a $15 to $25 copayment for every single doctor visit. I don't care if you're a bum in the street. You have to pay a copayment. I don't care if you have to go collect cans or you have to pick up whiskey bottles and turn them in for 5 cents a piece. You're going to pay a copayment every time you get fallen down in the street. We're not picking you up anymore unless you pay for it. We can't afford it anymore. Treat yourself better and you won't be laying in the gutter. Or stop grifting the system by visiting 5 specialists a week for nothing. Of course you're going to have people who have nothing in their life to go and listen, have their troubles listened to by a doctor. They love nothing better than to march in with their folder and have a nice young man or young woman pay attention to them because no one else wants to listen to their complaints anymore. So they sit there, this hurts, I got a crank in my back, and how was it, and how did it touch? And how long did your mother live? And it hurts me in here. I touch me on the heel. That hurt. And over there, touch me here. Can you touch my ear? I need a trim. Give me the nails. I want the nails done, by the way. Can you do a pedicure? And then the next day, they go to another one. Now, Obama is so whacked out on this subject that he actually introduced that we are going to have to subsidize mental health care on top of it all. It's bad enough we have the cranks with the physical ailments, 90% of which are made up. Now the cranks are going to come in with mental disorders that we're going to have to pay for. Who's going to pay for this? You're going to pay for it? It's impossible. Let's use a liberal word. It's unsustainable. Does that work for you? Let's use a liberal word. It's unsustainable. Everything Obama has created before he went off on vacation is unsustainable. Virtually everything he's touched is unsustainable. Everything. including Michelle's trip to Spain at $75,000 a day. Unsustainable. Only there's no song called Unsustainable You. Now, why does Bill Gates suddenly become the chief salesman for socialized medicine? That's the interesting question. Why did they enlist Bill Gates with the sweater and the oh-be-gosh, you know, college boy look? I have nothing against Bill Gates. You know, he did a great thing, created a great business. I admire entrepreneurs who succeed honestly. There's something to admire in every single success story in America, so long as it's honest. Don't get me wrong. But why is he now dipping his beak into this healthcare thing so late into the game? What's this all about? This is the interesting question. Why is Gates now peddling Obamacare with death panels? The answer is simple. The man's corporation employs, what, hundreds of thousands? I don't even know how many people are employed by Microsoft. Whatever the number is, if he could introduce death panels and they could cut out care for the last 3 months of a person's life, think of the millions that he could save, that he can give away and look even bigger. Okay, that's number one. And number two, there is a somewhat rational argument to be made for less medical care at all levels, incidentally. Never mind just in the last 3 months of life. I have limited medical care for myself and my family to almost the last emergencies. We go only in emergency. That's the way medicine should be looked upon. It should not be called the first crank, the first little pain. For example, I burnt my hand today, the coffee in Starbucks. If I were a different kind of person right away, oh, go to the emergency room. The hand's red. It's going to hurt me for a few days. Now, if I were home, I would have put aloe vera on it. I guarantee you it would have not burned me at all, because it's been used for treating burns going back to Cleopatra's time. I know that from the age that I wrote herbal books. I studied aloe vera chemically and every other way. It's a miracle. But they don't tell you to use aloe vera. They tell you, come to the emergency rooms. They look at your hand, charge the government $6,000 to put a wrapping on your hand. I sprayed it with a 398 jar of junk I had in the closet.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Families cannot imagine there could be anything worse than their loved one dying. But in fact, there are things worse. Most generally, it's having someone you love die badly.
And what do you mean by dying badly?
Dying suffering. Dying connected to machines. I mean, denial of death at some point becomes a delusion. And we start acting in ways that make no sense whatsoever. And I think that's collectively what we're doing.
You know, is spending $1 million on that last 3 months of life for that patient, would it be better not to lay off those 10 teachers and to make that trade-off in medical costs? But that's called the death panel, and you're not supposed to have that discussion.
Yeah, well, we're having it thanks to Bill Gates. And the death panels that we warned you about are definitely in Obamacare, courtesy of Rahm Emanuel's brother Ezekiel, according to what we could figure out. And, of course, they hid it from you because the propagandists in the propaganda ministry known as the media told you you were a right-wing maniac for even suggesting there were death panels. But, again, there are death panels, and now we're hearing there are death panels. Now, I include this in my book, Trickle Up Poverty. I'm mentioning it, whether you like it or not. It's probably going to be the biggest book of 2010. It's available frankly, not won't be available till October 5th, but it's on Amazon for pre-orders. And as I say, I mentioned death panels. I explained it. I found it in there. But the vermin in the media, the propagandists, the Leni Riefenstahls, the Goebbels of today, who work for the Stalin of today, laughed at us and said we were all right-wing nuts for warning you about death panels. But as sure as we're sitting here, they're in Obamacare. That's why Bill Gates is now peddling it, because he has so many employees it would cut his expenses and give him greater profits. And since his mind is always on the bottom line, no matter what he says, he knows that by cutting out some late-term care, his bottom line will be better. Now, you could argue as to whether or not that's rational. But don't lie about it. Don't say there weren't death panels in Obamacare when we know there are death panels in Obamacare. We're the only ones in the media who warned you about it. Not those who were impeded mentally on the television stations like MSNBC and CNN. And again, here we are. So we're talking about death panels on the Savage Nation. Now, some people I know have advanced directive forms with them. I've never filled one out. I'm spooked because the day I fill one of these out, I know I'm going to like get hit by a car or I'll fall down an elevator shaft. It says my durable power of attorney for health care. You got to give someone's name. It's like signing your life away. Then my living will. These are my wishes for my future medical care. After there comes a time when I can't make these decisions for myself. A, these are my wishes if I have a terminal condition. A, life-sustaining treatments. I do not want life-sustaining treatment, including CPR, started. If life-sustaining treatments are started, I want them stopped. Or, I want the life-sustaining treatments that my doctors think are best for me, or other wishes. Then, artificial nutrition and hydration. I do not want artificial nutrition and hydration. I want artificial nutrition and hydration. The next one is comfort care. I want to be kept as comfortable and free of pain as possible, even if such care prolongs my dying or shortens my life. Other wishes. Now, what other wishes would you want? You want to suffer? What are you, biblical? I would put in there, give me heroin, smack, whatever. Give me Bromley's cocktail. I want heroin, codeine, cocaine, crack cocaine, whatever you have, just throw it at me. B, these are my wishes if I am ever in a persistent vegetative state. One, I want to vote Democrat even after I am dead for at least 50 years. B, I want the life-sustaining treatments that my doctors think are best for me, and I want to vote Democrat while I am brain dead. C, I want to vote after I am buried for Democrats only. You get the picture. I mean, these are like people have the comfort care. I want to be, oh, I should did the comfort care already. It's frightening. I don't want to face any of this. Autopsy. I do not want an autopsy. I agree to an autopsy if my doctors wish it. Why would you want an autopsy? What, are you sick? It's against my religion. You ever been in an autopsy? I've been down there. I've seen the embalming and autopsies. You don't want to know from it. And you don't like hunting, but you want an autopsy? You don't believe in hunting, but you wanted a... Are you people nuts? If you ever saw who does those things, oh, God. The time I worked in a morgue, and I saw the pathologist with the cigarette in his mouth, with the ashes falling into the woman's brain cap, I quit the first day. I put down the broom and quit. I don't know what motivated me. I do know what motivated me. I was not a troubled teen, but I was a thoughtful teen. Let's put it to you that way. And I was racked with the sufferings of young savage. So I went to Europe and I was trying to find myself. I came back and the only job I can get, there were no Starbucks then. I took a job in a morgue. I'll never forget it. It was Queens General Hospital. It was a red brick building with a monster smokestack. An incinerator looked like really Auschwitz, and it was horrible. So they had a job for a mortuary assistant. And I had like a weird sense of humor. I was trying to write in those days, like poetry, short stories. Some of it wasn't bad in introspective. I read some of it Friday on the show. I'm not going to do it again for months, but I made that mistake. I take a job. I go into the morgue, and there's the pathologist with a cigar in his mouth, and he's performing these. I'm not going to give you the details. I wouldn't do it to you, but I had enough. One day of it, I just quit. He said, "Why are you quitting, kid?" I said, "No answer. Just goodbye." I mean, the ash in the woman's head was enough for me. Then the little girl, 3 years old, who looked like a doll, who was dead for no apparent reason. Just no reason. Not a bruise on the girl's body. Then the 50-year-old male, the white male with the, for me, the whole thing. I'm not into it. I couldn't handle it. So, you know, I don't have that kind of sense of destiny where I had to work in that field. Look, God, look, you know, there's 5-6 billion people on the planet. There's a place for all of us. We need morticians. We need the doctors who can do autopsies. We need medical examiners. We need we even need politicians if you really want to go down the scale. We need everything. And you have to have a peculiar personality to be any one of the things I just mentioned. I remember, you know, I knew kids in high school that were so damn smart. I don't know how they were so smart. But 15, 14 years old, these kids were wizards, a lot of them. Much smarter than I was, I thought, because they got A's all the time. I was suffering with C's and B's. I was a terrible student because my mind was always somewhere else. I was somewhere. My mind was always wandering. I couldn't focus on it. I could do, you know, the average amount of work, but I didn't like memorizing. They thrived on it. So anyway, the long and short of it is, I remember a kid said to me, a lot of kids in those days wanted to be doctors. In the milieu in which I grew up, there were very few careers outside of your father's business that a child who had a brain could pursue. You know, like going to the NYU film school wasn't an option, or creating a website, for example. So one of the is doctor, lawyer, dentist, accountant, that kind of joke, right? So the kids who were generally good at school wanted to be doctors or lawyers. That's absolutely true. And it meant something in those days. These were prestigious professions because it was hard to get into the schools. It was hard to get through the schools. It was hard to pass the board exams. And it meant something, you know, and you were rewarded financially for doing so. And I had respect for people who did it, by and large, except for someone I knew who went to law school who became a total crook, thief, everything in the end. You crook, you crooked Obama bum, you liar. Everyone knows you're a liar, what you did to your best friends, you rat. Aside from him, everyone who went into law I basically had respect for, except for that rat bum, asbestos thief. So the point is, the doctors, I knew a kid 15, I think he was a son of a doctor. They were usually smart. The children of doctors usually were whippersnappers. I don't know how they knew certain things. They could say things. I didn't even know the language they used. I came from a family. My father was an immigrant. They didn't have such great use of language. It didn't mean they weren't inherently intelligent. My father was extremely intelligent, but he had no real education, no formal education. I remember one of the kids said something about medical. He said something like, "It takes a peculiar personality to go into medicine." I didn't even know what he meant. It sounded smart, though, so I used it for years afterwards, thinking that I would, you know, entrap a young lady to go dance with me. "It takes an extremely interesting, peculiar personality to become a doctor." I had no idea what he was talking about. But didn't it sound smart to say a thing like that at 15, when most kids were talking about rubbish? But as I say, you know, you don't have to come from an educated family to have a native intelligence. You know, I thought about something very beautiful today, very nostalgic, and I thought about it with a certain charm. My poor mother passed away 5 years ago, so I'm thinking back a lot about some of the beautiful things that my mother did for me. She was the first one to teach me to dance. She taught me how to tie my tie. She taught me how to tie my shoelaces. I mean, mothers are amazing. Don't underestimate what a mother is, because you see the sluts on the Real Housewives of New Jersey. Don't assume they're mothers. They're mothers. My dog is a better mother than most of those. I never saw anything like this, what they have on television today. Real Housewives of New Jersey. They look like they have staples underneath their skin. I never saw any. Who would want that for a mother? These children would be better off in a foster home. The girls are going to wind up sluts in the gutter with mothers like that. Real Housewives of Washington, because they have an English accent, so they're not a slut. You hear? The nose is in the air, and they have white skin. They're not a slut. Degenerates, all of them. Who would do a show like that, expose their children to it, I ask myself? My mother wouldn't have done a thing like that. Believe me, all the mothers of my generation, they never would have done that. They would have put the children first, always first, always, not themselves. The narcissism of these women. So I'm thinking back to, I remember Mama, you know, just a shorty. I remember when I entered high school. Now remember, here I am, man-child in the promised land. My father's an immigrant. My mother's an immigrant. And I go to high school. Now, this was the big step from junior high to high school. And I remember to this day, it came back to me, that autumn day that we got the book, the going back to school, you know, like the book where you put in the, what do you call them, like the index things with the subjects. Geometry, well, we knew what geometry was. English, knew what that was. You put in the thing, you type in English, and you slide it in. And then I was going to take physics because I wanted to take all the science courses I could. So I filled out physics, and I said to my mother said to me, she didn't know what physics was. She thought it was something to do with digestion. I said, no, you could laugh. You could laugh at her if you want. It was an innocent statement. You know what I'm saying? Did that make her less of a person because she didn't know what the word physics meant? It didn't make her less of a person. It didn't make her less of a person then, and it doesn't make her less of a person now. It made her the beautiful person she always was. And it's the same today, by the way. if I see immigrants from Ecuador or Mexico or Nicaragua, and I see the mother and I see the children and I see the father, you know what? All the more power to them. When I see a nuclear family, I don't care where they're from. God bless them as long as they're not on welfare. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So you don't want to talk about something as cheerful as death panels. I understand that. The Democratic Party chairman, Dunce, Tim Kaine, says don't politicize Michelle Obama's travels. She said critics of Michelle's travels to Spain are trying to politicize the issue. So he went on NBC's Today Show, which of course is a part of the government media complex, as much as Izvestia was part of the ex-Soviet Union. And he said that this was an opportunity to take her 9-year-old daughter on a trip. And Kaine said, she's a mom. She's a good mom. And she was just taking her daughter on a trip. Now, of course, people could ask, if they weren't intimidated, why didn't Michelle go to San Diego instead and boost tourism in the state of California, which is a basket case? Why didn't she visit the coast of California and say it's as beautiful as any place on earth? Why, in particular, did she go to Cordoba in Spain when the Cordoba Institute is trying to impose the mosque in New York City as a sort of victory construction dance on the site of where 9/11 occurred? Now, for those of you who are naive, like the billionaire mayor moron in New York, who don't understand how Islamists work, I invite you to read an article by two moderate Muslims, who say specifically that building a mosque at Ground Zero is exactly what the right wing has been saying, exactly what the middle wing has been saying, exactly what all rational people have been saying, except the people who are profiting from this, who are saying it's a part of religious tolerance. The Muslims are saying, no, it isn't, you idiot. It's an act of provocation specifically. It's an insensitive act. Everything I've been telling you, it's a common sense. I didn't need an expert to tell me what this was. All I've got to do is tell you, go to look at Jerusalem, whether it's on the internet or elsewhere. Look at a thing called the Temple Mount. The Temple Mount is a mosque built atop the ruins of the original Jerusalem Jewish temple. That is what Muslims do, is they build mosques wherever they conquer. And so this is an act of conquest as much as visiting Cordoba is. Something is wrong with this whole picture of the Obamas. Why would she go to Spain in particular and visit Cordoba? We had enough with the Muslim middle name. We had enough of this mystery of where he was born with the Muslim father. We have enough of this. There's enough suspicion that he's a stealth Muslim trying to impose some kind of Sharia law in America in the long run for him to have understood not to do this. But instead they go again to incite people who are already suspicious of him. And then they get mad at you if you're suspicious of him. I think that Obama is clearly trying to provoke this in people in order to, for political gain. My personal feeling is that this is all calculated in order to provoke suspicion in the people who are suspicious of him for their own reasons. It's a very clever game they're playing at the expense of America and the American people, in plain English. But you know all of this. Wisconsin Joel, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Hey, I was thinking about what you said about the trip overseas, and I thought to myself, AIG threw a bash after they got bailout money, and they came down on them and created a pay czar.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why don't they start a vacation czar?
Yeah. Why doesn't somebody take away Obama's credit card?
Exactly.
Why didn't somebody take away Michelle's credit card and say you've overspent? We can't afford to give you a $75,000 a day vacation. We don't have the money for it.
The class warfare is only good for them to talk about.
That's right. Class warfare, that's right. The rich white people. That's right. $75,000 a day to go cavort with royalty. No, it's a disgrace. This, unfortunately for us, we don't have an opposition party that will capitalize on this come the election when they should run pictures of her in Spain and pictures of him bowing down to the Saudi king. And things of that nature. That's what a true opposition party would do come the election. But you know the Republicans are not going to do that. You and I both know that they're going to sweep it under the rug and say that it's not fair. They're like herrings. Herrings with an R next to their name. Pickled herrings. That's what we have for Republicans. Pickled herrings in suits.
Savage. You are my special angel sent from up above. The Lord.
Death toll in Russia, 700 a day. 700 Russians are dying each day from smog and a raging forest fire in the central part of Russia. 700 people are dying in the Russian heat wave every day. This is an amazing story. They're finding people dead, old people are dying, and the smog from the forest fires are being blamed. And the number of deaths each day in the capital of Moscow had nearly doubled to 700 as most of central Russia entered the seventh week of a heat wave. The high temperatures are hovering around 100 degrees. Now, here's the frightening part about this. These temperatures in Russia have destroyed 30% of the nation's grain crops and have triggered massive peat bog and forest fires that have killed more than 50 people and devastated dozens of villages. Now, I want to remind you that countries have been driven to war in the past once their grain crops have been devastated. Now, we pray to God that this doesn't happen, obviously, but here was a country that was doing quite well as a kind of mixed Soviet communist capitalist system. And now you have nature that takes its own course and follows its own destiny. And you have 30% of Russia's grain crops destroyed. People are dying. The morgues are filled almost to capacity. And now they're saying that residents, instead of following Russian Orthodox traditions of the tradition of holding burials on the third day after death, bury loved ones sooner. Unbelievable. Pollution exceeded its normal levels in Moscow. Residents fleeing the city. All passenger flights and long-distance trains were booked. Dozens of flights were delayed because of the smog. Some countries are closing their consular offices and evacuating their staff. U.S. Embassy cutting hours. And so there it is. Go explain it. Now, you could say global warming. The minute you read it, so the left wing will scream global warming. But if you look at South America, they're having the coldest winter on record. It's not about global warming. It's not about this. It's not about that. Weather is very hard to predict. And the fact is we all want a less polluted world. We would all like a less polluted world. That's a given. So don't lecture us about that. We all understand the green world. Everything's green to the schmuck. Okay, I invented green. I wrote books about saving the earth before most of you were born. I wrote Plant a Tree in 1975. I wrote Earth Medicine in 1972 that's still in print 30, 40 years later. Don't lecture me about green lives. I know all about it. Don't give me the rubbish that you learned in college that's worthless. You can't even serve a cup of coffee in Starbucks without scalding a person. So don't lecture me about the environment. You go look. You don't read the stories, though, about South America, do you? And the cold wave in South America. That you don't read about. So what are you going to do about it in Russia? I don't know what they're going to do. I have no idea. Here in San Francisco, a cold wave we've had like this, I haven't seen anything like this in 40 years I've lived out here. It's like nuclear winter out here. Every day, cold, cold, cold. So today we had a little sun. Finally, it looks a little bit like a bit of a summer. I haven't had one barbecue all summer, thank God. Only my schmuck neighbor, he'd have one in the rain. Just to spite me, he has a barbecue. I hope he doesn't get what the other neighbor got from barbecuing every day, a little stomach cancer. Who eats barbecued food every day of their life if they have an education beyond the first grade? These people are like Bronze Age people I live near in Marin County, California, like from the Bronze Age. The heaths. You know where the word heathen comes from? Barbecues and fireplaces. That's heathens. Every day, like burnt meat. Every day, a piece of burnt meat. He doesn't know that it's benzoapyrenes are going to give him a stomach cancer. Every day, a burnt, like a hunter-gatherer up there with the fire. He discovered fire. Fire, good. Burnt meat, very good. Not going to get cancer. No, it disturbs my neighbor. Make more fire. Fire, good. Go ahead. God sees the truth, but wait, see if I care. While I'm eating my tofu and beans, you eat your burnt meat. That's all. Don't call me about any of this. Nothing. Nothing. Call me about Michelle Obama's big trip to Spain better and why Cordoba, and tell me why she had to go to Cordoba instead of San Diego. Go ahead, justify it. Go tell me about the sensitivity of the Obamas. And why is he home alone in Chicago? What was that all about? Does anyone have an answer to that? Why was he alone in a house in Chicago while she was in Spain? That's like very unusual for a young couple who happens to be a role model and a president. There's no responsibility here.
They're like irresponsible children who are going running amok as the leaders of the free world. But if you think things are bad, you're right. But they're only going to get worse. They're about to pass another bill, a bailout this time for teachers now. And then you got the dwarf, Robert Reich, waiting in the wings to be rehired. The midget up there at Berkeley. See, every day I see him on MSNBC there, sitting on phone books. Every day lecturing communism like he discovered it. He wants a WPA-level program with trillions of dollars more spent for the bailout. You hear? These people are insane. Do you understand that they're functional idiots? They're like idiot savants. They were smart enough to get government jobs, but they're a little too dumb to do anything useful for us. Don't call me on that either. There's nothing I want to hear from you for. What are you going to say that I haven't said already? You know, what are you going to tell me what I know? The people didn't tune in to hear you call. Unless you somehow advance the conversation somehow. This is the problem with talk radio. If it's just an amen corner, you know, I'm not knocking you directly, only a slight indirectly. We already talked about death panels. I'm talked out. We played Bill Gates with the shucks, bagage. Bill Gates talking about death panels. We warned you about it. He attacked doctors. Road to recovery doesn't follow. Play clip 16 for a laugh. Go ahead.
Climbing out of any recession, much less a hole as deep as this one, takes some time. The road to recovery doesn't follow a straight line. Some sectors bounce back faster than others. So what we need to do is keep pushing forward. We can't go backwards.
That's right. That's why a good trip to Spain will help the Spanish economy. That's the important thing, is to help the economy in Spain. I don't know if I should play this about why Cliff Jean wants to be the president of Haiti. I know that Sean Penn wants to be the president of Haiti. You see, it's one vulgar man versus another. Would you actually think Sean... I think Sean Penn... I would actually just send money to his campaign. God, I would pray that he become the president of Haiti. What a fitting conclusion to a despicable life. That really would be great if Sean Penn would be willing to become president of Haiti. Then we'd be rid of him. Let's hear clip 25.
What the Haitian people need now is a leader who's genuinely willing to sacrifice. And one of the reasons I don't know very much about Wyclef Jean is I haven't seen or heard anything of him in these last 6 months that I've been in Haiti. I think he's an important voice. I hope he doesn't sacrifice that voice.
Oh, so he wants to be president. He's jealous that someone trumped him, that an actual Haitian wants to be president of Haiti, as opposed to a rich boy from Hollywood who went to Ridgemont High. I mean, if you were a Haitian, would you rather have someone who went to Ridgemont High, Sean Penn, or a Haitian to be the president of Haiti? My suspicion is they wouldn't want the actor from Ridgemont High. Let's hear clip 26 now of Ridgemont
His
High.
His voice has really been most loudly that which allegedly had taken over $400,000 of money that was designated for Haitian relief. For himself, he claims he didn't do it. I think that's going to have to be looked into. In the meantime, I've been there where I know what $400,000 could do for these people's lives. So
why don't you send your own money, big mouth? Really, go ahead. Go ahead. You know what it could do for their lives, but I don't see you jacking up a nickel. $400,000 to you is nothing. You know, you got two prizes already from Hollywood. What's 400 grand to a big shot like you from Ridgemont High? You know what it could do for the people, but you don't jack up a dime. What is he doing in Haiti? What is this with these psycho liberals? I don't understand them. Everywhere on earth is their business, but their own country they hate. That's the thing. That's the thing. Liberalism is a mental disorder. No one said it better than me. When you reach that point where you have no answer for a question, where you're perplexed, and you hear a lunatic like this arguing about who should be a president, and he's not from Haiti. But he says that a Haitian shouldn't be the president of Haiti. He's arguing basically that he should be the president of Haiti. I think he's upset that he was upstaged by Wyclef Jean. You know, he put 6 months in there probably in a luxury hotel with every need catered to, and he wants everyone to believe he's really, you know, down with the people. They're not buying it. You know what I mean? They'd rather have a Haitian, even if he's mildly corrupt, as he says. They're used to corruption. That they understand. They wouldn't even understand a leader who isn't corrupt. They need a corrupt leader. That they understand the guy could get aid for them. You think a straight-up guy could get aid for Haiti? You need someone who knows how the system of the UN works. So you need someone who's on the take. That's the only one that will actually bring money in. That's why he doesn't even understand this. He can't. He went to Ridgemont High School. While I was saving the earth, he was getting, you know, a doobie, smoking a doobie in Beverly Hills. What else do we have now? Who's this guy? We're cancer and religion? I don't want to hear him. I wish him well. So I shot the best sound bites. There's no bullets left here. There's no arrows in the quiver. So I'll go back now. I pulled an arrow out of the target. I'm going to bring it back and put it in the bow. Here's Bill Gates arguing for death panels exactly as we warned you in clip two.
You know, is spending $1 million on that last 3 months of life for that patient, would it be better not to lay off those 10 teachers and to make that trade-up in medical costs?
But let's stop right there, Bill. If it was your last 3 months, I would say can the 10 teachers is what you'd say. Right, Bill? You're saying is it spending $1 million in the last month of life for that patient, would it be better not to lay off those 10 teachers and make that trade-off in medical costs? I would say, Bill Gates, if it was your last months of life, you would say, the hell with the teachers. I don't care. I want to live that extra 3 months. But you know and I know that this is never going to affect you. So you're sitting there up in your tower, your ivory tower, and arguing for death panels now. And you're putting it in terms that the average person can understand, which is 10 teachers are going to hold their jobs if we only off the person who has only a month to go. Pull the plug on him, in other words. Again, we say, look at other countries. Now they're all pointing to other countries like they're Nirvana now. Everything is other countries. And he's saying we don't need specialists. We need a European-style socialism now, Bill Gates is arguing. Isn't it amazing everything we warned you? What's the use? Tourist shooting here in San Francisco. A woman, 50 years old, is walking in the theater district. 9 o'clock last night with her husband and dead in his arms. Two rival groups of teenagers were attending a party in the theater district, and they do what their culture permits them to do, which is shoot each other when they come out. In other words, they didn't come home to do their homework. They came out and got into a shooting match, because that's what teenagers in San Francisco do if they're of certain groups. And the police are afraid of them because the mayor doesn't let the police touch them, and the police chief doesn't let them do anything to them. Instead of busting them before they shoot anybody, they go on disability, and they get a nice pension for stress on the job, for using a keypad too much, the mouse. They get tunnel carpal syndrome, 85% of total payment for the last 900 years. Woman's dead. Two other women shot near a club, San Francisco. And the big city mayor, what does he have to say? Nothing. Nothing. He's pushing a carriage somewhere on Nob Hill. It's out of control here. You wonder what's going on in a liberal city. Five teens detained in tourist shooting, but they won't identify them in the newspaper. The worthless rag of a newspaper that no one reads anymore. It's sad. I see the guy at the shopping mall giving them out for nothing. I don't even have it in me to say it's a joke. He can't even give them away. At a farmer's market, they can't give away the San Francisco Chronicle. You'd think the guy selling lettuces would take one to wrap a lettuce in, but they don't even want the ink on the lettuce. They use like an organic leaf of some kind. And then they write the article. They don't even identify who did the shooting. They won't show you the pictures because you're liable to put two and two together and say, oh, look at that. They don't all come here to work. How do you like that? Geez, some of them have tattoos and bandanas on. I thought they all came here to be gardeners. You're not allowed to think. Here's a recipe for an apricot instead. That's all. And a picture of a slut actress who just caused the president of HP to get fired, and now she says there was no sex, because they got a wonderful attorney. She got a wonderful attorney, a live, a great human being. She brought down the head, the CFO, rather, of Hewlett-Packard, the man who saved the company and turned it around. And now she says that she didn't have sex with him either, but she got Gloria Allred as the lawyer, you hear? And you wonder what's wrong with America. Well, I could finish this conversation in another way, but as you well know, I won't. 1-800-499-8255. Five detained in connection with tourist death. No picture. Jody Fisher says her claim toppled CEO of HP, but she didn't mean to do it. You hear this? This old slut. I mean, this old woman. I mean, this. It's unbelievable to me. The guy didn't even touch her. All she had to do was say sexual harassment. They threw him out. That's how intimidated they are by these lawyers. The old hag, age 50, identified herself through her attorney as the independent marketing contractor. You know what that's an acronym for, independent marketing contractor. You go on a sex site, you can find independent marketing contractors with more integrity than this one, in my opinion. Her allegations eventually caused Friday's stunning resignation of Mark Hurd, CEO of HP. So she has the nerve to say through her Los Angeles attorney, if you want to call Gloria Allred an attorney, I was surprised and saddened that Mark Hurd lost his job over this. That was not my intention. What the hell was your intention? You hag, you? You hag, you? If we lived in a sane society, you and your lawyer would be in jail. Fisher said she had reached a private out-of-court settlement with Hurd and then had him fired. But the single mother of a young son reiterated that she had not been involved romantically with Hurd, who was married and had two children. Mark and I never had an affair or intimate sexual relationship, the dirtbag said. I first met Mark in 07, blah, blah, blah. I only hope that your son winds up sane with a mother like you. That's all I could say. I only hope your cougar son, the son of this cougar, winds up sane with a mother like you. And I only hope Gloria Allred's children don't have happen to them what she does to people in this country. That's all I hope for. Why would they fire him? How in the world would a company be so dopey that they would fire this man who turned the company around for a dirtbag, non-actress like this? I don't understand companies today that they're so afraid of the word sexual harassment. What did he do? He looked at her with longing eyes? Hurd, age 53, was highly regarded for turning around Hewlett Packard's financial fortunes after he succeeded former chief executive Carly Fiorina in 05. He resigned amid allegations of sexual harassment and business misconduct. Carly Fiorina, another prize, running against Boxer. That's out of the frying pan into the Fiorina. I mean, I'll take Fiorina over Boxer, anything but the bagel. Are you kidding me? I'd give anything to see her running a Brazier store. Oh, if only Boxer would be gone from my eyes. If only I didn't have to have that nasal accent once. If only I didn't have to see that hag once, gone. Even a loser like Carly Fiorina would be an improvement over Boxer the Bagel. I'll be back. Savage.
Come gather around, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times, they are a-changing.
One of the great balladeers of American history, Walt Whitman with a guitar, Bob Dylan, really a great artist. I mean, what else are you going to say about the guy? The guy is great. He always was. You know, he's still singing. That's the thing about a lot of these guys. They made a lot of money and they blew it. They went through it. They churned through it like, you know, fish through water. I don't know what they do with their money, but at this age, still singing, it's a rough gig to be able out, to be out on the road doing that. Anyway, still doing it. They still do it. They got musicians coming up from Cuba here in the Bay Area from the great Orquesta Aragon that I listened to when I was young. And some of these guys, and the singer, the lead singer in this Orquesta Aragon is 90 years old. Entertainers have another thing going. I studied it once. I think about the aeration, the movement. They once studied conductors, and they found that the most conductors, at the time they did the study, didn't get heart attacks. They said it was because of the use of the arms, the circulatory, you know, the upper body, chest, and all that. Interesting. I guess you could say the same thing for a wife beater, but you can't put it in the same category. Thrashing the arms and a wife beater shirt, Jersey Shore comes to mind. I don't know. They haven't done a retrospective study yet. A wife beater will live as long in general as a conductor. But if you use the upper body, who knows? Maybe there's something in talk radio because of the use of the oxygenation of the... Why do I know about this? So there are death panels after all. And we learned that Bill Gates' dad is pushing a income tax for the first time in the history of the state of Washington. You hear how these meddlesome billionaires won't stop until they bust the whole middle class? This, my friends, is Marxism 101.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Climbing out of any recession, much less a hole as deep as this one, takes some time. The road to recovery doesn't follow a straight line. Some sectors bounce back faster than others. So what we need to do is keep pushing forward. We can't go backwards.
Hey, girl, gather around, pick up the water I'm putting down. Ooh, baby, I'm still a handyman.
The big stories today are Michelle's foreign trips and Obama tripping on foreign, meaning for the first time ever, a U.S. president has sent an ambassador to Japan to memorialize our dropping atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki to end World War II, the war in the Pacific.
I'm busy 24 hours a day.
This is Obama's tacit apology for liberating the United States from war with Japan. A land war with Japan that would have taken at least 500,000 American lives, according to all rational military estimates. Now, given that Obama cannot stop the liberal shibboleths from interfering with his thinking process, America is being put into one embarrassing situation after another. Let us review for a moment what would have happened had Harry Truman, not dropped two atomic bombs on Japan to end the war in the Pacific. After all, the U.S. had given Japan the opportunity to surrender. Our great military had smashed their fleet, had smashed their air force, and they firebombed Tokyo, killing many thousands of people. Still, the Japanese military would not quit. The invasion of Okinawa soon took place. It was supposed to be a prelude to the taking of the mainland of Japan. 30,000 U.S. casualties, untold numbers of Japanese who fought virtually to the end, and Okinawan civilians died. This was hand-to-hand combat of the bloodiest, most savage and brutal kind. And that's when the U.S. military planners realized that an invasion of the Japanese mainland would be impossible without losing 500,000 American men to conquer Japan, if it would be possible at all. And that's when Truman decided to dump the bombs, drop them on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And so, I must tell you, last night I was listening to one of the left-wing fanatic stations, paid for with your money, a public radio station in Berkeley known for America-hating, and they said that dropping the bombs on Japan was the equivalent of the Holocaust. Now, these are scum of the lowest order who enjoy their freedoms because of the brave men of World War II. Otherwise, we would have been living under the yoke of Hitler. People like them would have had a ring in their nose working on a plantation somewhere. But no, they have to condemn all of the men who died to free us from Hitler in World War II and to free us from the Japanese Imperial Army. And so I ask you, you hear things like this. How do you feel about Obama apologizing for what a far braver president had done to win a war in the past when this president is incapable of winning the war against Islamic terror? Number two, do you think the U.S. ought to apologize to Japan and pay reparations to the Japanese for having nuked them? Or wasn't the rebuilding of Japan reparations enough? These are some of the questions on the Savage Nation today. If only the Republicans win, everything will be fine, because they're the good guys and the Democrats are the bad guys. That's the way the game is played. I was taught that when I was a little boy in New York. My father took me by the hand. Just think of me as a kid who knew nothing, because all kids know nothing. I know many liberals think their children are brilliant, but most children are, they know nothing. So children know nothing just as dogs know nothing. But Americans are so naive, they think that there's wisdom in a child, and they get on their hands and knees and ask a child what they think. What would you like for dinner, honey? What does a child know? They watch television. They want Jell-O. You want it to eat Jell-O? Or vote for Democrats about the same thing. So Dad took me by the hand. He knew it was a dangerous country. And he said, look, Michael, here's the way it is. I'm an immigrant to this country. And the way it works is a beautiful country. It's a great country. And he said, one band of crooks gets the power called the Democrats. And then all the years they're in power, the crooks call the Republicans, point their fingers at them and say they're no good. They did this. They did that. And then the American people naively put in the other crooks, the Republicans. And then for the next 4 years, the Democrats point their fingers and say, look at those crooked Republicans. Why, if you put us back in office, we'll straighten things out. You'll have the most honest government in history. And you wind up with Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid. And now we think we're going to wind up with Newt Gingrich. Are you people crazy? Don't you understand that there is no fundamental difference? There are some structural differences in some ways, but at the end of the day, not a heck of a lot of difference.
Savage.
When you smile at me, well, I know our love will always be. When you kiss,
writer who did such a great job interviewing me in his profile of me in the New Yorker now has another well-written piece out, this time on boxing. Khalef Asena, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. It's great to talk to you again.
Tell us about this boxing profile.
Well, yes, it's an article about boxing, which is, you know, something that has been in the magazine's DNA almost since the start. I mean, for decades, the New Yorker covered boxing heavily. Obviously, A.J. Liebling wrote a series of really classic stories about boxing, and it was normal to pick up a copy of the New Yorker, and there'd be an article about, you know, the latest fight. And obviously, boxing has kind of slipped out of the mainstream in the last few decades, and I mean... to be honest, I figured that your average New Yorker reader probably wasn't following in the day-to-day ins and outs of boxing and maybe couldn't name a boxer in the era since Mike Tyson. But I kind of, you know, and I'd been a casual fan over the years, and then in kind of looking around at stories, and I came across some characters, and sort of by accident, about a year or two ago, got sort of obsessed with it and found myself watching, you know, any fight I could get my hands on that was on TV, which means all the fights in English and occasionally fights in Spanish, even though I don't actually speak Spanish. And so I ended up just really getting obsessed with it and getting interested in the idea of an article that could maybe explain the sport to a casual reader who hadn't been following it and explain what's interesting about it and what's frustrating about it. And for me, part of what's interesting about it is what's frustrating about it. Boxing is a sport that's kind of incredibly decentralized right now. It has four major and some more minor sanctioning organizations. They're giving belts in 17 different weight classes, sometimes more than one championship per weight class. And so there is no authority. There's no ruling power, really. There's no ruling monopoly. There's big promotional companies and there's big stars. And so in some sense, it's kind of a mess. And it's kind of left up to the fans to figure out how to make sense of this mess.
Do you think that is why its popularity has dropped?
Well, it's hard to know, you know, which comes first. I mean, one theory that is put about boxing is that in America, if you're a big, tough guy, you can maybe make more money with less risk as an offensive lineman in football. And if you're a kid that's, you know, excited about combat sports, maybe you're watching mixed martial arts instead. You're watching UFC or something. So, you know, there is a sense in which some of the kind of big athletes in America have maybe been lured toward professional football, which is, you know, in a lot of ways a much easier, although not entirely risk-free, way to make money. So maybe that's part of it. I mean, boxing is odd, though, because in other parts of the world, you know, it might look like a golden age. I mean, if you're a boxing fan in the Ukraine, you know, your country is home to the two greatest heavyweights in the world, the Klitschko brothers, Vitaly and Vladimir. So in other parts of the world, it's still hugely popular. And even in America, a big boxing match on pay-per-view will get about a million buys, which is similar to what a big UFC fight will get. So there is still this popularity, but it doesn't have necessarily the pop cultural resonance right now. And that's definitely related to the fact that it's hard to follow, and the fact that there's no easy answer to the question that any reasonable person would ask, which is, who's the best? Who's the champion? And the answer is, the champion is whoever feels like the champion.
Well, what do you think draws people to boxing?
Well, you know, people have often, you know, certainly there's something about boxing that gets at, you know, a basic human interest in seeing two guys and seeing which one of them is tougher. I mean, that's something you see in any culture anywhere in the world. And, you know, there's this, you know, and it's often been said that nothing draws a crowd quicker than a fight. And so there is something about that. Obviously, aesthetically, you know, boxing is not actually a free-for-all. There's tons of rules and there's tons of kind of culture and tradition. There's something I like about the rhythmic nature of it, the fact that you have guys kind of shooting punches in a rhythm, you know, bang, 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 bang. There's something kind of hypnotic about that to me that I really love, and I really love watching it, whereas you know, the rhythms are a little more haphazard in mixed martial arts. So, yeah, there is an aesthetic component to it, too. And there's also the kind of cultural part of it, which is that boxers tend to be really interesting. They tend to be people with interesting lives, interesting ways of talking. They come from neighborhoods where you might not get a glimpse of except through boxing. And so the characters are always going to be a kind of a big draw for anyone who gets obsessed with it. For this story, I wrote about Shane Mosley, who's something of an exception to the rule. He didn't grow up in exceptionally tough circumstances. He's considered sort of one of the nice guys of boxing. And to me, he kind of illustrates what's strange about boxing, because he's in some way more of a conventional athlete. He's not someone who's kind of driven, as so far as we can tell, by, you know, demons, and he's not on the verge of self-destruction. He's not kind of a typical boxing character. He's kind of an athlete, and he's a guy who wants to go out there and compete. And he has the good and bad fortune to be an athlete in a sport that doesn't necessarily reward pure athletes. An athlete in a sport where typically it's helped to be a character. And again, Shane Mosley is certainly, from what I saw and by all accounts, a really nice guy and a great athlete. And, you know, sometimes in boxing, that's not quite enough.
Is boxing making a comeback?
Well, it's funny because you can go back to to people writing in the 19th century about and kind of bemoaning the fate of boxing. Boxing fans have always had a certain fatalistic, pessimistic streak, and there's always been a sense, you know, you can read people writing in the 40s saying boxing's not what it used to be. So that, you know, that's an old complaint, and depending on the season, boxing might look as if it's, you know, on the verge of coming back or on the verge of going away. One of the interesting things is when we talk about golden ages of boxing, or we talk about the Tyson era, we're just talking often about one person. And when we talk about, oh, it's been a great year for boxing, often we're talking about one fight. So in other words, the late 80s, early 90s might look very different from the point of view of a casual observer if it hadn't been for Tyson. And similarly, everyone in boxing right now is really depressed because the fight that everyone wants to see, which is Manny Pacquiao versus Floyd Mayweather, is not going to happen this year. If it were going to happen, everyone would be very excited. So it's kind of hard to tell. In terms of from a longer point of view, in terms of the long run, yeah, you'd say that a big prize fighter now doesn't have the kind of cultural relevance necessarily in America that they might have had in the 70s or 80s. And, you know, again, that's partly because there's more competition from other sports, and it might also speak to the somewhat dysfunctional nature of boxing organization in America. I think if you had one boxing organization ruling with an iron fist and forcing fighters to fight each other, et cetera, yeah, I think that would go some way toward building up the sport. But I think most sports that we like and that we love and that are popular have an organization that functions basically as a monopoly. If you like, you know, if you like basketball, you're watching the NBA, and the NBA, to a large extent, gets to set rules, gets to sort of tell franchises what to do, et cetera. And often it helps to have a bit of a monopoly in order to create what we think of as a healthy sport. And, you know, boxing is closer to a free market. There's not really a monopoly. And, you know, on one hand, you could say that's good because you could say that fighters get to negotiate and get to be paid what they're worth. But again, on the other hand, that means that there's no one who can force the top fighters to fight each other if they don't feel like it.
And what's the next article for you?
You know, it's funny. We're talking now just from a quirk in the schedule, the week after this boxing story ran, another story of mine ran about country music, about a country singer named Brad Paisley. And, you know, it's funny. I was at the New York Times for years, and at the New York Times, you know, I was a music critic over there, and basically you report a story, you go to a concert, you file your story, and they print it the next day, whereas at the New Yorker, you know, things can spend, you know, months kind of germinating and working their way through the process. So it can be, it's always kind of random in terms of when things actually get published. I try not to jinx things too much by talking about them when I'm working on them, but I'm working on some stories related to TV and the movies, which I'm excited about, and also some stranger stories. And sooner or later, I'll have to get back to writing a political story or two as well. But like I said, it's funny because I never know exactly what's going to be published next. The next thing that gets published for me will probably be about stand-up comedy, and perhaps there are some parallels to boxing there, though I couldn't tell you exactly what they are.
Khalefa Senna, thanks again for being on the Savage Nation.
Thanks a lot for having me. It was great to talk to you.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
Don't believe all those lies. Darling, just believe your eyes and look, look. My heart is an open book. I love nobody but you.
Let's go to michaelsavage.com and see which stories made it to the top of the page. Because, you know, sometimes I get to these stories and sometimes I don't get to them. But they're all worth reading. Number one, michaelsavage.com. Islam's Dirty Bomber is the son of an imam. He lived in New York City and Florida. Thank you, liberals. Thank you, Mayor Bloomberg. It just shows that a billionaire could be a moron. It just shows you how a billionaire can still be a moron, that money does not indicate intelligence, when you consider that Mayor Bloomberg would like to see a mosque triumphant over Ground Zero. Next headline from the London Telegraph, my headline on Michael Savage, Barack and Michelle act like tin pot dictators. Oh, really? I thought they were from the people. From the Wall Street Journal, U.S. to sell F-15 fighter jets to Saudis. From the New York Times on Michael Savage, across the nation, mosque projects meet opposition. Ooh, we can't have that. The most important article, I think, is from two Muslims, moderate Muslims, who say the following. The Ground Zero Mosque is meant to be a deliberate provocation to thumb our noses at the infidel. Everyone knows that, but the moronic billionaire Bloomberg and company. Bloomberg thinks he's being a good liberal. It was written by Rahil Raza and Tariq Fatah, two Muslims who know where they're coming from. And oh yes, those of you who want more multiculturalism, take a look at the six beautiful faces of the Muslims in England who are forcing middle-class white girls into the sex trade. Most of the men running the sex slave gangs in the north of England are Asians of Pakistani origin. But very few of the authorities will say a word about it because they fear offending the Muslims. Take a look at their darling faces. They're snatching 13-year-old girls off the streets of England and turning the little blonde girls into their whores. That's what you get with multiculturalism. Speaking of multiculturalism, take a look at the picture of Queen Michelle meeting the King of Spain while America goes merrily down the drain. Well, you get the picture. It's all on michaelsavage.com. We'll keep talking about this and other topics on the show today, but let's stop for a minute. I know you listen because this is one of the last places you can get real, honest, independent, conservative opinions and unfiltered news. And I want you to get the full impact of the Savage Nation. Go to TRN1.com, become a premium member, and get Savage Live, Savage Archives, and the Savage Podcast at TRN1.com. Click on my picture at TRN1.com today. The teachings of the wise is a fountain of life to depart from the snares of death. Yeah, good luck to you. Yeah, you're going to live forever if you read the Bible. See, that's the problem with the whole thing, is that even if you get, you know, still going to drop dead at the end, you don't know where the what's on the other side. You're taking a gamble. You're gambling. You're just gambling that there's an afterlife and you get a reward. And what's the reward? Since you don't know about it anyway, you see, there's no win here. That's the terrible thing. You see, no matter how you twist it, no matter how religious you are, it still doesn't matter. Because you're still full of doubt about the next world. I don't care who you are. If you're not, then you're a real lunatic. If you're sure that there's another world with a gold chair because you were good here, oh, my God. You probably voted for Jimmy Carter. And you're probably a planet-saving shopper Republican. A Republican planet-saving shopper. Imagine that if you got this. That's oxymoronic. A Republican. No, there'd be Republican planet-saving shoppers. That'd be good, like, if you're looking for, like, dates, like eHarmony. Why don't you plug that into your eHarmony account? Planet-saving shopper seeks same. You can meet over like a bag together. You go buy shopping bags together. Can you imagine that? I don't know how that works because I came from another age. We didn't do that. It was like on the Natch. You met someone in the street and talked to them or whatever. Now it's like, how do you do this by computer? I don't get it. Planet-saving shopper. See, that's the problem. Is when you really get into the whole thing about death and dying, that's what it really comes down to. You fear, you see, like a bad politician makes you fear that the country's dying, right? And a good politician makes you feel the country's getting better and you're going to live in and everything, your children are going to have a good life. Obama, you know, is the opposite. You know he's killing America as sure as you're standing here, ruining it, inherited a $1 trillion deficit, made it $4 trillion. Surrounded by corruption unlike any ever seen in American history. Never before seen. One corruption scandal after another covered up by the vermin in the media. So you feel like the country's dying because it is. That's all. Now you come to your own personal fate. And so that becomes an issue. So let's say you've towed the line, you've done the best you could, you've only cheated, lied, and stolen a little along the way. Not big. And you figure, all right, so you're not as good as you wanted to be, but you're better than you could have been done, certainly you didn't do. Or you're recovering this or that, and you think you're going to be rewarded for it. But what if you don't get rewarded for it? What if you could have just continued to be bad? You ever think about that? What if you just could have, and the same end would have happened? You would have lived the same exact time period, suffered the same fate. What I mean, yeah, the wages of sin are death. Great. And what are the wages of righteousness are? Death. Same thing. Good, good, goody two-shoes. Still death and dying in front of a curtain alone in a rest home being beaten about the head and neck by some illegal alien who tries to take the small change your children bring you. What's the good of it? So you don't know which way to turn. So that's all. So you indulge yourself. You eat too much. You drink too much. And you get a headache that you get paid for. That's immediately the wages of sin and death. You overeat. You overdrink. You get sick. So that God immediately punishes you. So therefore, you don't know what to do if you're an average person and not that religious. You don't know which way to turn. Fundamentally, America is not a religious country. God-fearing, yes. But look at all the sluts in Hollywood that wear crosses. I mean, let's start with that just for a minute. Please, I don't mean to be disrespectful of the symbol. Have you ever seen any of these, like, freak shows with crosses? Cross this. I never saw anything like it. Every degenerate in Hollywood has a big cross on their neck. So what does that mean? I mean, inside they're pure? Because they wear the symbol of it? I don't get that part of it. At the end of it, we don't know really what's waiting on the other side. But here's the thing that I've always come to. No matter how much I read the Bible, it comes back to the same thing, which is this. Let's say you are rewarded. Now, let's take the other side. There is God. There is a judgment day. And you go before him. Well, all right, come before. What are you doing? Your talk shows. What else? You did this. All right, it wasn't so bad. You could have done better. You could have been a dentist and played the accordion. You could have stayed in the Bronx and whatever. You would have died at 14. But all right, you went on. You had to be a big mouth. You wanted to do it your way. All right, it wasn't so bad. I'll tell you what, I'm going to split the difference with you. You're only going to spend 1 million years in purgatory. Then you'll come back as a toy poodle in San Francisco in 1989. The votes of 7 million Californians was nullified by one Little Caesar by the name of Judge Vaughn Walker. One Little Caesar in black robes has said that I am 7 million times more important than you are. One judge thrown out the votes of 7 million Californians, and this left-wing judge in a black robe has ruled that you have no vote whatsoever. Judge Vaughn Walker was appointed, by the way, by George Bush Sr. He struck down California's Proposition 8, which said that marriage shall only be between a man and a woman. In a 138-page decision, Little Caesar assaulted and insulted the voters of this state. The Little Caesar called Vaughn Walker claimed that Prop 8 places the force of law behind stigmas against gays and lesbians. Little Caesar claimed that the right to marry protects an individual's choice of marital partner, regardless of gender. Now, let me go on to the next step. The fact that this Little Caesar happens to be gay is an issue. This is a bias. And the fact that the media refuses to report to you that Little Caesar is a member of the gay community is unto itself a bias. I want to assert immediately that the bias inherent in Judge Walker has been seen before. For example, during the campaign for Proposition 8, Little Caesar, the gay judge, forced those behind Prop 8 to turn over thousands of pages of internal memos to the other side, and Little Caesar Walker allowed the trial to be broadcast in order to embarrass the people who brought Proposition 8. Both of these rulings by Little Caesar were overturned by higher courts. So to begin with, you have an inherent bias in the form of the judge. He has shown himself to be biased. But the real question today is not so much do you approve or disapprove of gay marriage, although that is fundamentally at the core of the whole discussion. Judge Walker says it's unconstitutional to ban a gay from marrying. I ask you, ladies and gentlemen, what is more unconstitutional? Is it not more unconstitutional that one man, albeit a stinking vermin in a black robe, one man has nullified the votes of 7 million people? Do you not think this is unconstitutional that one man shall have power over 7 million people? It's exactly why the United States of America was created, to avoid tyranny. So we have gone from black shirts to black robes in several generations. In the 20s and the 30s of the last century, Mussolini, the fascist dictator, sent thugs in black shirts with nightsticks out into the streets to beat up anyone who might oppose his tyrannical regime. Mussolini used brutality and he stole votes in order to get into power. But not even Mussolini had the audacity to nullify 7 million votes to achieve his ends. Tell me the difference between the black shirts and the black robes in America today. I want to remind you, Proposition 8 was passed by the voters of California in 2008. And even though the state voted for Obama, an overwhelming majority of Californians said that marriage was between a man and a woman. Even black voters, all of whom 90, 95, 98% voted for Obama, 90% of black voters voted against gay marriage. 70% of Asians or 80% of Asians voted against gay marriage. 80% of Hispanics voted against gay marriage. So how does one bitter Little Caesar in a black robe have the power to throw out all of those votes? The only question for you today is Judge Vaughn Walker 7 million times more important than you are? Now, I want to ask you some other questions. How do you feel about one Little Caesar stealing 7 million votes? Number two, are you for or against gay marriage and why? Number three, do you actually think that all gays are in favor of gay marriage? Because I know it not to be true. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. My name is Michael Savage. This is an incendiary issue, and I'm going to invite you to call this show to talk about how you feel today learning that one man, remember, underneath that black robe, there is a man. Who has empowered this one man to have more power than you? Is it in our Constitution? Show me somewhere in the Constitution where it says one man's vote is more powerful than 7 million people. I thought this country was built on the edict of one man, one vote. How did it become one man, 7 million votes? How did this rotten, stinking creature think he has the power to throw out 7 million votes? It's clearly unconstitutional what this rat did. And I'm going to tell you again, if your father or your grandfather died in a war in order to give you freedom, he's rolling over in his grave today because what this pig did. I'll be right back.
Savage.
When you left me all alone at the record hall, told me you were going out for a soda pop. You were gone.
time for the Savage Nation Media Idiot of the Day.
Remember we told you about the creation of death panels by Obama to determine who would get care and who would not get care, and you laughed at us? You laughed at the propaganda coming out of Obama and Rahm Emanuel, who said there are no death panels, that it was right-wing paranoia? Well, here is Bill Gates
the U.S. spends 17%
setting up the idea that our system is broken and needs
death panels. You drop down to number two, which is Switzerland at 12%. And so you say, well, hey, what do we get for that? Well, we get nothing. The health outcomes, which are complicated to compare, but the health outcomes are basically slightly worse, both in terms of averages and the inequity. You know, is spending $1 million on that last 3 months of life?
Listen
to
this. He comes out and says it.
Would it be better not to lay off those 10 teachers and to make that trade-off in medical costs? But that's called the death panel, and you're not supposed to have that discussion. One statistic that jumps out is and no one else's system has anything like that. That is unique to the United States. And it's because it's a rigged market. That is, the reimbursement rates have been set, the pattern set by the government through Medicare, and it was a rational decision to become a specialist. But what that means is if you're a patient, you have lots of doctors who are coming in and doing little pieces of things. Whereas in Germany, which is the best, their one-to-one ratio, specialist to GP, that GP is having to do a lot and really manage your care. So both in terms of quality and cost, it's a much superior system. What effectively the other
why do all
the
officials come here for
the
treatment then?
Align properly. It's effectively you have somebody who's got it has to look at the long-term cost of somebody's sickness. And so they're incented to invest up front in preventative care and the relationship with that patient. And there's not some artificial thing where the sicker your patient is, the more money you make. Your asthmatics to have
more of the greatness
episodes
of the Euro health system.
And if you teach them how to take their medicine and how to do the right things, you go to the poorhouse.
Right.
So it's an odd sort of system that we've designed. Now, if you're in an HMO, like a Kaiser Permanente, it's the opposite. But forcing people into an HMO, I'm told, is politically very difficult. But that would be a huge mode change in terms of the incentive system. You know, maybe not a doable one. But if there's any clear lesson from the European systems, it's having that alignment of interests.
And that was your Savage Nation Media Idiot of the Day.
There's lots of other stories, including Hiroshima, the shady rapper who wants to be the president of Haiti, and it's unbelievable to me. 1-800-449-8255. Seattle gives out free pipes to crack cocaine users. If you want to see the most idiotic story of the day, read that one from the Seattle Post Unintelligencer. 1-800-449-8255, Michael Savage. There's so many other stories, I can't even finish them up today. But anyway, start from the bottom and work your way up. Oh, yes, there's a murder spree in the liberal city by the bay called San Francisco. A German tourist was killed and four of the people were shot in separate shooting in San Francisco. And the vermin at the local newspaper will not identify the shooters, will not show their pictures, for fear of offending those who do the shooting. Incidentally, my book, Healing Children Naturally, is still available on michaelsavage.com. A to Z Natural Approaches for Natural Complaints. And may I remind you that my to-be-published book, October 5th, God, it's 2 months from now, I can't wait, Trickle Up Poverty. You can see it on amazon.com and order a pre-copy to make sure you get it. The book cover alone is a walking billboard. Picture yourself at a tea party. Picture yourself on a supermarket line. Picture yourself at home, just holding up the cover, whether you're a party of one or a party of 100. picture a sea of covers that say trickle up poverty. What a billboard that's going to be. You don't even have to raise your voice because a picture is worth a thousand words. Trickle up poverty on Amazon. I'm Michael Savage. I began my professional career as a writer. Of course I don't compare myself to the writers I'm about to mention, but they were my mentors, and there have been quite a few books banned in quite a few nations over the years. Brave New World by Aldous Huxley, banned. I grew up on him. Banned in Ireland in 1932. I read everything that Huxley wrote, including his magazine articles on furniture. Candide, Voltaire, seized by U.S. Customs in 1930. Dr. Zhivago, one of the great books. Boris Pasternak, banned within the ex-Soviet Union until 1988. Gulliver's Travels by Jonathan Swift. Banned in Ireland, 1984 by George Orwell. Banned by the USSR in 1950 because Stalin, the mass murderer, thought it was a view on his country in the future. The Satanic Verses by Rushdie, banned. The Sorrows of Young Werther by Johann Wolfgang von Goethe, banned. Why? Because the sorrows encourage suicidal deaths in susceptible individuals, they thought. Now, here's a shocker for you. Did you know that The Call of the Wild by Jack London had been banned in Yugoslavia and Italy? I don't have any idea why. But those are some of the books that have been banned. So if Michael Savage is now amongst those authors who have been banned, I think I'm in very good company indeed. And if you'd like to read Banned in Britain, you can go to michaelsavage.com because it was never available in bookstores. It's sure to be a collector's item now.
Savage.